He's now.
Pass through. Actually, we didn't hear. Normally, we get the Department of Natural Resources who says they bring in all the money to the state. And we didn't hear the Commissioner of Revenue who usually says they bring in all the money to the state. And we usually get three or four departments that are responsible for 90% of the money, which means we never know where it goes. But if you could, just for the record, state your name. And
Mr. Chairman, my name is William Hensley. I am the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development.
Go ahead with anything that you wanted to.
I do have a little phrase like that in my statement, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my department, Commerce and Economic Development, is small but diverse department. We have just under 400 employees that perform a wide variety of business, professional, and corporate licensing services. We ensure the financial solvency of the state chartered financial institutions, also regulate public utilities through the Public Utilities Commission. We provide and service loans to commercial fishermen and to nonprofit fish hatcheries, market tourism, as well as seafood, as well as promote finance and economic development in a broad variety of sectors. Mr. Chairman, the first several pages of the budget book give an overview of what the department does, and I might add that on page 11 we have the our organizational chart for the department. Our total operating budget for request for 98, Mr. Chairman, is $60.8 million. Of that amount, 23.1 is non-general fund money, primarily corporate and endowment receipts, federal funds, and loan fund receipts. $26 million is designated in other program receipts from fees for service. The balance, which is $11.7 million, is our unrestricted general fund request. Chairman, that represents one half of 1% of the total state unrestricted general fund operating budget. The pie chart on page 16, Mr. Chairman, indicates, you know, what our sliver of the state budget is. And on page 18, there's a graph which compares the revenue that we have, our revenue and expenditure trends that have gone on for some years, starting in fiscal year 1990. And as you can see from the chart, there has been a rather dramatic reduction also in our unrestricted general fund authorization, the black line, and a significant increase in our fees for service supported authorization, which is the designated program receipts. Also, we have steadily produced more unrestricted revenue for the state treasury throughout that period of time. And Mr. Chairman, I feel that our department does pay. It's more than pay our way. Some of the highlights for our general fund budget for 98, some of the changes are the public employee cost of living and health insurance costs have been funded. There's an increase also of $200,000 in the Alaska Tourism Marketing Council budget for enhanced television advertising, which will be matched by $66,000 in contributions from the visitor industry. This would allow the council to increase network cable television advertising from 9 weeks to 14 weeks, which would generate an additional 72 million gross impressions. This image advertising is very important, Mr. Chairman, for sustaining public interest in visiting Alaska as a tourist destination. It's a very competitive area. Mr. Chairman, the Division of Trade and Development budget is being reduced by $82,700 with the elimination of one minerals development specialist in Juneau. This leaves one development specialist in minerals in Fairbanks. With this move, we'd have a development specialist in each of the areas, fisheries, forest products, and in minerals. Also, the film office in the Division of Tourism is being reduced by one development specialist and with a total of $157,000. This will leave $14,000 in travel and $50,000 in contractual services for the film program. We'll continue trying to provide some services in this area through the Division of Tourism office staff, which will allow us to do trade publication advertising, participating in some 2 to 3 film location expositions, hosting several in-state location scouts, and product development trips for producers. And what we do for, in addition, would be to pass on responsibility for location assistance to outside production companies, to local destination marketing organizations, which is what we do, Mr. Chairman, in handling tour operators. Also, $97,000 is being added for 2 paralegal positions in the Public Utilities Commission to expedite commission orders. As the level of competition in telecommunication and other regulated utility sector grows, we need faster decisions by the commission. We feel that delays can interfere with the competitive marketplace as well as individual utility plans. So this increase will help pay, will be paid for by a regulatory cost charge. Also, we have taken an advantage of carry-forward funding in the Division of Occupational Licensing and Insurance to improve investigative and other services supported entirely with licensing fees. There are other smaller changes throughout our budget, Mr. Chairman. They are described in the budget document. We'll be happy to go over those with the your budget subcommittee chairman. With respect to questions of the fiscal year 97 budget, there will be no supplements for fiscal year 97. Our expenditures are on target with our fiscal year 97 appropriations. as a result of the 97 budget reductions, the department eliminated 4 filled positions. We also eliminated 2 vacant positions and downgraded 2 full-time positions to part-time. Mr. Chairman, the past year we've introduced several efficiencies in the department. I'll give you an example of 4 of these. In fiscal year 96, the divisions of trade and economic international trade and economic development were combined to form the Division of Trade and Development. This resulted in the elimination of a director position and 2 administrative positions. This has been the first full year of operation of this division, and I might add that I've been very happy with that effort. The department's word processing center was eliminated, and with that, we transferred the processing staff to the line divisions, but were able to eliminate a supervisor in administrative services. Also, in the Division of Banking and Securities and Corporations, we introduced a payment by credit card system, which was new, to expedite services to our customers. And the state's beginning to look at that, expanding that, I believe. Also, in July, our Korean Trade Office was co-located with the Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau, which provided for a 40% savings for rent at that location. Also, we've combined our tourism office and trade office in Tokyo also for some substantial savings in Japan. Finally, we've had to try to do more with less to improve services to our customers. The state vacation planner and other visitor information is now available through the internet. And business, corporation, and insurance license applications are also available through the internet, and a variety of other kinds of information that hasn't been available to the public, you know, on the internet is now available. We've expedited and simplified it, licensing and other services to make it easier for our customers to do business with the state. With respect to the retirement incentive program, we've offered that program to 15 employees, and our window is between January 10th and February 28th for some indication as to what they want to do. We'll know by that date how many intend to retire under this program. I'd like to end this initial presentation with some of the things we hope to accomplish in the coming year. We are continuing our efforts to implement the Marketing Alaska initiative. You may remember that we went into this effort securing about 200 recommendations for a variety of changes in how we do, in what we do in government to assist the private sector, and we're actually continuing that that effort and meet periodically with the executive committee to see how things are going. We have a specific project to develop an incentive program for international carriers to use Anchorage as a passenger delivery point. There's nothing more frustrating than to have to spend time at the airport in Anchorage, fly all the way to Seattle, spend time at that airport, fly right by Anchorage on the way to Japan. And I think this would be a big benefit to our trade. We're also, there's a great deal of interest, Mr. Chairman, in by Alaskan entrepreneurs, service providers, who want to do business in the Russian Far East. And we've established a low-cost but permanent presence on Sakhalin Island. There are plans to spend literally billions of dollars over the course of many years in efforts to develop their resources there, and many Alaskans feel they can provide some of that expertise. also, we will continue the governor's business opportunities program, which the governor, other cabinet members, the lieutenant governor, visit corporate boardrooms to solicit investment in Alaska and to encourage economic development here. And, Mr. Chairman, I've had the good fortune of having been on some of these trips, and I think there's nothing more valuable than sitting down and talking to people who are basically responsible for making the decisions for their companies some years hence, trying to determine you know, what their problems are in doing business in Alaska and what we can do to assist in that. One impression was real strong, and that is in visiting with the smaller oil companies that we don't normally hear about, but who are very excited about the prospects in Alaska, companies like Union Texas and Anadarko, who have been wildcatting around the world, having fairly good success, and look at Cook Inlet and the North Slope as places where they want to be. And our hope is that we can continue having lands available for them to look at. also, we're working in cooperation with other agencies to implement an action plan for the salmon industry. We've been charged by the governor to coordinate the administration's response to the current problems that this industry is facing. And we had some short-term efforts that we made during this last fishing season, which I believe were productive, but we also have a longer-range plan. And we have planned a three-day salmon forum at the end of this month here in Juneau, trying out some ideas that we may well be presenting to you. Also, the department has charged our department, the governor has charged our department with developing a business plan for a sustainable timber industry in Southeast Alaska. And we've also been working very diligently in response to the mill closure by Ketchikan Pulp, a rather strenuous effort with the local communities, not only in Ketchikan, but on Prince of Wales Island and Metlakatla. And these are some of the things that our department works have been working on, and we'd be happy to sit down with any of you to talk about these in detail at any time.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner, well, actually, I would observe to the committee that one of the efficiencies that the commissioner noted was a combination of a couple of operations that had trade and tourism, and we've got a couple of committees in our legislature that maybe we could combine and achieve some efficiencies as well. On tourism, there was a significant decline in rubber tire tourism this year. Do you have some understanding of why that occurred and what we can do?
I've had some conversations about that, and there's not any one particular reason that we know of, but we suspect that higher gas prices could have been a significant deterrence to some people in making a trip to Alaska. But, you know, you might want to ask the Division of Tourism at some point if that is their impression.
Yeah, we had heard similar. It would be nice because there's a lot of rumors floating around. The Olympics is one where a lot of people actually supposedly, you know, it was a big deal in Atlanta that they went to the Olympics. We did have the promotion of the highway a couple of years ago. There's a natural drop off without that going. You know, I've heard lots of reasons, but it's hard to say whether it was just people weren't interested in coming to Alaska, whether it's our marketing that's doing the problem or just natural forces. But, you know, those questions have been asked, so if we could get. Not now, but I mean later, if anybody has any definitive answers other than ideas.
We'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman. I think our Tourism Division Director has been, in fact, in Tok having a forum there on highway travel, and so we'll mention this question to him.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you again, Commissioner. One of the ideas that was floated in the last couple years was the combination of the Departments of Commerce and Economic Development and Community and Regional Affairs. Has that discussion proceeded to any extent within the current administration in the past interim?
I think our only discussion sort of took place last year. during.
You were hoping it didn't go away.
Yeah, well, there haven't been, I don't believe, any significant discussions about combinations of departments from the standpoint of the savings. I mean, last year our feeling was that it may not have been worth the wear and tear on people to go through that combination effort. I mean, I've seen what it's done with it. When you're doing it with just divisions, you know, there's always a little bit of uncertainty that goes with that kind of an effort. And so far, I don't believe that there's any serious discussions about that.
The reason I asked, Commissioner, was following up on what I believe were discussions that were posed by the Office of Management and Budget, you know, playing out what-if scenarios if you were faced with a 5, 10, or 15% reduction. I thought perhaps one of those, at one stage within that level of reduction, you might have said, well, hey, it makes sense at this point that we just merge and become one.
Well, there's actually been maybe short of discussions about departmental, you know, mergers. There's been some talk, I think, particularly among the administrative services people as to, you know, which functions might be more economically handled, you know, between departments. And I think some departments actually have collaborated on certain functions. So there has been maybe not mega discussions, but segmented discussions on that topic.
One of the things that we've asked to be done at the subcommittee level is for each of the commissioners or whoever you want to present to talk about some of the things that you went through with OMB. We talked to Annalee and a number of the commissioners as well, that there were, what would a 15% reduction mean, and what kind of efficiencies can you find, and maybe go through some of those discussions so that our group understands the kinds of things that you considered, turned down for one reason or another, or accepted, so they get a little idea of what the impacts might be. Representative Terrio?
Well, one of the along the same line, the you indicated a reduction of one staff person in the minerals development specialist category, leaving one person up in Fairbanks. Is there concern? Why don't we just shift that over to the Division of Mining within Department of Natural Resource? Or is there a concern that you would have a cheerleader for the industry housed with the regulators in the industry, and that's not something that would be desirable?
Generally speaking, well, I wouldn't say we're cheerleading. In part, we are, but we do work fairly closely with, you know, with the mining community, and at least as far as I've observed, it's worked quite well in the in our department, on occasion we've. Made joint appearances with the Department of Natural Resources, who are basically the managers of the resource, and work very well together. I suppose there are any number of combinations that might be made along those lines, but that's not something we're recommending.
Do you have any other questions?
Mr. Chairman. Just a quick, to go back and touch on the two new positions in APUC.
Oh, yeah.
But you said it's all going to be paid for with chargeback.
Yes. Those are two paralegals. They would cover those with the regulatory cost charge, which they're permitted to do.
No other questions? Thank you, Commissioner. And we will, like I said to everybody else, hopefully middle of next week we'll have the subcommittees appointed with the chairman, so you'll know who is on those. The chairman is, so you can start working with those.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Cashin. Anybody else you'd like to bring, you're welcome to have a pull of chairs up. But
thank you, Commissioner.
You're the Commissioner.
I'm the Commissioner. You're the Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't get nervous at these things.
Nothing to get nervous about.
For the record, my name is Tom Cashin. I'm the Commissioner of Labor. And with me is R.B. Williams, Admin Services Director for the Department.
I assume you're going to go through line by line,
line
number
by, line.
By number. You're the only one's given us a very detailed spreadsheet. It looks like it came out of revenue or something. And
I'm going to show you a pie chart again. I didn't want the new members to miss that.
Well, actually, your sliver is smaller than Commerce. The Commerce sliver, it's hard to distinguish the difference. And you know, it's funny, I think if we put all the slivers together from all the departments, there'd still be half a pie left. I don't know where it all goes.
Yes.
No.
Mr. Chairman, the thing that I always want to point out is no matter how small your piece of pie is, there's always somebody else that would love to have that piece of pie.
That's right. That's right. Okay, I think you've heard my pitch before. I'm a dispense for that, with the small pie sliver. On page one, our cast of characters is the same. None of us have been asked for a resignation yet. I feel fortunate to have got a great supporting cast here, directors and deputy commissioner and special assistant. Makes my job pretty easy. On our second page shows where we are from we're in FY 97. Some of the things that during FY 97 that happened to the department, we had a general fund reductions of $276,000, and we also had a federal reduction of about $1.2 million. We deleted 18 full-time positions, five in admin services, 11 in Employment Security Division, and two in Labor Standards and Safety. Fortunately, we only had to lay off nine of those, seven in Employment Security and two in Labor Standards. We also reduced our staff in Employment Services field offices. We reduced our state mechanical inspection program from four electrical inspectors to three, and from five boiler inspectors to four. We do not expect any excess general funds remaining. Some of the efficiencies and cost savings in 96 and 97, trying to maintain our program services with reduced federal cuts and state cuts. Admin services, our federal revenues were reduced to $500,000. The two layoffs there accounted for $150,000. We reduced personnel positions, $80,000, and absorbed various other costs for $270,000. We reduced the data processing bill to $2.5 million. In Employment Security Division, we reorganized the employment service operations while we were able to maintain all of our field offices. We reduced regional management, reduced field staff, and co-located with partner agencies. In our unemployment UI operations, we centralized that, provided faster service to the public and processing claims for UI, allowed field staff to provide employment and training services and outreach to prospective employees. In our labor standards and safety department, we reduced mid-management positions. We had four assistant chiefs. We now have two. We consolidated licensing activities and mechanical inspection and now process licenses electronically. We coordinated inspection activities with licensing requirements of the Department of Commerce and workers' comp insurance requirements. In the workers' comp section, we implemented an electronic information handling system to provide accurate and timely information on the cost of workers' comp. We've run through most of our presentation in previous years with you, Mr. Chairman. If you would like us to elaborate on anything, we'd be more than happy. I guess most of you, this is our third time around, so you know what the department's comprised of. Most of our general fund money, half of it's in labor standards and safety, roughly, and then the rest of it is 29% of it in workers' compensation, and then the rest divided up amongst the commissioner's office, employment security, and administrative services. So.
Anticipating any supplementals at all?
No, we're not.
How about any legislation that you guys are working on?
No, we've got some housekeeping legislation in workers' comp, but won't be any fiscal notes attached to it. So.
There is such a thing as just housekeeping in workers'
right.
comp? It seems as though
you don't believe
like
me. Ask Paul Gross. He's right here.
Okay.
To answer your question, we don't anticipate any fiscal notes on any.
Okay. Representative Terrio, you had a question.
Yes, the question on the proposed reduction from the administration last year, that I think it was an electrical position in Fairbanks and a boiler.
Right.
And I'm remembering when we came to full finance with the budget. In consultation with Representative Bryce, who had a proposed amendment, I thought we had restored the funding for the boiler inspector in Fairbanks. Now, maybe that didn't track through all the way through the conference committee. But if you could just go back and touch on how those reductions shook out. And then I have a question of whether there was an increase or maybe a proposed increase of one plumbing inspector in Anchorage, I think.
Yeah, let me answer your first question first through the chair. The boiler inspector didn't shake out. It wasn't restored, so we did have those two cuts in Fairbanks. We got a lot of complaints that we'd added laid those two off and added a plumbing inspector in Anchorage. That was a temporary position because of the Miller's Reach fire. He went out there and he was put on as a plumbing inspector, but he did all kinds of things, checking licenses. We were certificate of fitnesses, what were worried that there'd be lots of fraud and JIPO contractors and people from all over the country pour in there to take advantage of that situation. So that's why we're able to use some funds to put an individual out there for 6 months. So he was on the job for about 6 months, and he's not there now. But it took care of a bad problem, or you know, could have been a bad problem out there. But and anyway, the word got back to Fairbanks that we had laid people off there and put additional people on in the Anchorage area, and that's not so. That was for to make for the emergency in the valley there.
So the funding, was it general fund or some disaster relief funds that you could steer to towards this?
Yes, it was. Representative Terrio, through the chair, it was AHFC money. And actually, we plan on our 98 budget reflects the an addition of that position as a permanent position. We entered an agreement with Commerce and Economic Development to do enforcement of their contractor and electrical and mechanical administrator licensing. The Director of Labor Standards and Safety, Al Dwyer, feels the best bang for the buck is to spread that money amongst the inspectors throughout the state, so while they're out there doing inspecting what they are qualified to inspect, they can also check for electrical, mechanical, administrator licensing, for contractor licensing, for certificates of fitness. But that position will be funded with an interagency receipt, and through interagency receipts.
Representative Davies?
Yeah. A follow-up on that question, if I could, just a quick one. Can you characterize the trend in the need for mechanical and electrical inspections? Is that something that's fairly constant, or is it increasing? Or
Representative Davis, through the chair, you know, all our needs are increasing, just like everybody else. As the population increases, the chart on page 19, there's some charts there that probably illustrate that pretty well. We've got more employers and more employees to serve every year, and then we know we've got to take budget reductions at the same time. So that's nothing different than. Than anybody, any other department in the state. So we're just, you know, trying to do what good as we can with what we've got. In our discussions with OMB, was that another question you answered? You'd asked other departments. I noticed came out of that with about $100,000 cut. What would happen in a scenario that we had to do major cuts? We'd have to start eliminating programs.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, I had one other. I noticed that you have you're trying to participate in the one-stop shopping. Some job services program, and that you indicate that you have been doing that in Fairbanks. And this kind of leaps ahead to the next presentation, but since you're part of that, I wondered if you could comment on it. In the Community Regional Affairs, there's some federal money to help with that, and it's being allocated around the state, but not in the instance of Fairbanks. And I know there's some requirements there for restructuring the state offices there. Can you tell me how that's going? And if there is a need for additional funding to accomplish that?
Yes, Arby's been working on it.
Representative Davies, yes, the one-stop money that was received through Community Regional Affairs, a total of $7 million, a little over $2 million will be received this year. The one-stop, the cost of actually doing the physical move for one-stop in Fairbanks was not included in year one. I believe it's included in year two. I know that Mike Andrews, who coordinates that initiative, has met with the four directors who have who have programs that are employment and training types of programs, and they will look at the, you know, they are, I mean, that, from what I understand, is going to be part of their discussion. You know, you apply for a grant, you know, a federal grant, and a year and a half later, you know, you find out whether you get it or not. You know, then you can come back through as long as the, you know, as long as you maintain the purpose of the grant, and then look at what our current needs are. And I believe that committee for directors, Rebecca Nance, our director of employment security, is one of those. We'll be looking at that immediate need.
On that, there's 7 million to 7.2 or something over 3 years, or is this supposed to help consolidate some of these agencies or where people come to do business? Is that right? Are we anticipating, once this is done, I mean, this is going to help the moves and the coordination and some of the planning, are we anticipating, I would hope there'd be some savings, you know, that would come out of this? I mean, once this is done, are we going to have ongoing operating costs, or is this going to get the stuff done, at which point we should hopefully either get more efficiencies for the same amount of money or save money? Is that the intent, or are we going to have to replace $7 million to continue the program after 3 years is over?
Representative Hanney, a lot of, excuse me, Commissioner. I want to get on a roll.
He already said that you were dealing with this one.
A lot of that money is going for standardizing hardware and software that employment and training agencies use, and also to fund physical co-locations. It's also intended, not only from the program perspective, but from the public's perspective, to provide an electronic one-stop operation, so a member of the public can get on the, you know, can get on a computer and can through one screen access information from all of the partner types of programs. We are aware that once we standardize electronically, when you have a data processing operation, there are ongoing maintenance costs. And one of the committees formed, again under Mike Andrews, is the technical advisory group of data processing people in each of the partner agencies, again, who are looking at what we can purchase so that it, in the long term, minimizes our cost of operation and also perhaps takes care of some of the, you know, the increasing cost of those operation now. What we're trying to do is ride those federal dollars on, you know, to be able to save general fund dollars down the road.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner and Arby, in relation to Representative Davies' question about mechanical and electrical inspections, you know, I think the chart is real good to show that, you know, the amount of employees, employers, and of course buildings that are being constructed around the state. I don't know if they're necessarily going up, but your inspection workforce is going down. But a couple of years ago, we had the electrical and mechanical administrators legislation that was passed, and the actual intent of that was to provide some security to the public that those buildings were completed per specifications in a safe manner according to the codes. Are those regulations in place, and have you seen any effect of that legislation?
I think so, and we coordinate with the Department of Commerce now to make those inspections. The problem with the EAMA was they had the law was there, but there was nobody to enforce it. So that's and we got lots of complaints, both of us, over that situation, but. They've RSA'd some money over for us to do that now. So when the electrical inspector is out on the job, and Keen I say, he can also enforce the licensing requirements for commerce. So I think that deficiency's helped.
Another question, I can't. The one-stop shopping, of course, in the Kenai areas has brought some concern. And of course, I think, and of course, the concern is that there are sensitivities between communities, and there are sensitivities among employees that are maybe in the future having to shift their location of where they work, sometimes up to 20, 30 miles. And so that's a sensitivity I think the department needs to maintain when they look at these efficiencies. Of course, you know, the efficiencies are being somewhat mandated by budgets. There's no question about that. And I would just appreciate whenever there is an opportunity to accommodate the sensitivities of communities and employees that you give that due consideration. And that's all I'll say on that. I know you've probably heard plenty of other kind of debate from other people. And also another item that's hitting the Central Peninsula, Kenai Peninsula, is the UI call centers. And I wasn't really aware of much about the details of that new efficiency being implemented. It was my understanding that the call centers were just now being implemented in Anchorage, but now I've gotten information that they were implemented in some of the regional offices, but now they're being more centralized. Is that the situation?
We don't have the UI centers in any towns. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Rebecca, just Kenai and Kodiak still and Matsu. They're the only ones left. And
when were those initiated?
Go ahead. Rebecca Nance is our Director of Employment Security, and she's worked on this program the last couple
Representative
of years.
Representative Davis, so. Through the chair. We have currently three call centers for the unemployment insurance program that are considered call centers. Currently, Matsu, Kenai, and Kodiak still have the unemployment insurance operation in their office. In the individual offices. Because of federal funding and federal trends, we're being encouraged to streamline and set ourselves up for future success because we anticipate, probably not this fiscal year, but we anticipate a further reduction in funding for the unemployment insurance program. The state of Colorado, for example, has one UI call center. California has one call center, and it's really kind of the wave of the future in terms of using technology in order to provide a service to the public, your constituents, in order to file their claims in a pretty hassle-free manner so that they don't have to go face-to-face to someone. Basically, it's kind of like using the private model with the government agency to provide a service, an insurance service. Basically, most of us don't have the luxury of going to a claims taker when we're filling out an automobile insurance claim or a homeowner's claim or a health insurance claim. And so the guidelines and directives that we're getting from the feds is to move in this direction and to anticipate further reductions in that program for administrative funds.
So that's a new program. A new automated program that's being initiated in Anchorage?
It's not, it's kind of a combination of things. We're trying to offer a variety of services to our claimants. Some of our claimants live in very rural areas. They may file either by mail or by phone. Claimants in Anchorage must file by mail or phone. They can't meet with anybody face-to-face, and that's true in Juneau and Fairbanks as well. So we're trying to streamline the process by offering our customers a choice in the manner in which they file a claim for unemployment insurance.
That's fine. Thank you.
Any other questions for the commission?
It's offline.
Do you have any other comments you want to make?
No, I think we'd be glad to work with the subcommittee and do anything else we need to do. Appreciate your understanding on some of that. I know you get lots of heat from your constituents when we, you know, it's no fun downsizing, especially when you're laying off your friends. But so we're not, you know, we're trying not to show preference for one area to the other or any political reasons, or just doing what we got to do. So I think
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Political, no funds, I don't have any worries.
Commissioner, you didn't fire my friends for political reasons, huh? So you didn't fire my friends in Sitka for political reasons?
I didn't fire him because he was a friend of yours. John, the problem in Fairbanks is... Well, Fairbanks City does their own...
We had it in the budget, but it fell out in conference committee because all the refineries on the coast side, we had it in the budget.
Yeah, he said they
went to conference. What's the possibility of
a lot more because of the stock? They don't have near as much.
Well, we know, but provide extra support to the city to get provide a little extra support to the city. I expect to do some of the other work.
Is the commissioner here?
I don't remember us in the region.
I don't see. Ramon? Or someone here from the commissioner's office?
Which one?
I don't see the commissioner.
Lamont?
Oh, Lamar, you want to join us? Hi, Commissioner. Is he? No, it was Mike Irwin.
Yeah. Mixed him up.
I was looking. You're not the commissioner, are you?
Not that I'm aware of. No.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure if a change of it. I was kind of looking for Mike.
There's no palace coup, so.
No, I. We'll wait till these guys shut the door and then.
One was a overview on department organization charts and kind of briefly outline the different programs that we provide. And secondly was a FY98 budget request summary. I think the front page was a pie chart. What I'd like to do is just briefly give an overview on the department.
I just have one. We've got the pie charts, so the one page I don't think we have. We'll have someone make a copy if you have it.
Okay.
And you can go ahead. Okay. I noticed on your pie chart, though, you didn't do it quite the same way as the others. I mean, you haven't. Yours is just showing your whole department. It doesn't show what thin slice you are of the total governmental budget.
Well. If somebody else got that gimmick, that explanation, we would want to use that as well. It's a shop-worn idea.
Your department used
we'll
to use
hand out those sheets, but just be aware that the one page okay. It'll be a couple minutes.
So. We have the department overview as well. There was a kind of breakdown.
You have this one.
No, in addition to that, there was a written document, just kind of an overview of what the department does. They don't have that one. All right. We'll keep you in the dark.
Now we can read it.
Sure. Community Regional Affairs, most of you know, is actually it's 25 years old. We have 171 employees, four divisions, Municipal and Regional Assistance Division, Division of Energy, Division of Community and Rural Development, and then Division of Administrative Services. We're located in seven communities, Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, and Dillingham. Lion's share of the employees live in Anchorage. They serve as outreach not only for the central part of the state, but also work quite a bit with our field offices. The focus, I guess, the mission, whatever the current buzzword, of our department is community development, be it individual, family, or community. Most of our work pass-through money contracts are with cities and community groups. Briefly, again, Municipal Regional Assistance, which is probably the oldest division, provides technical assistance, if you will, in the field, principally to smaller communities, communities under 1,000, mainly in western Alaska, although all parts of rural Alaska. We provide assistance such as, we call it RUBA, Rural Utility Business Assistance, which is working with communities with their utility systems This is a tie-in to the governor's sanitation task force. It's clearly one of the issues that I think we'll be facing in the future, and that is the idea as we complete this objective of building water and sewer systems in rural Alaska, that the M&O cost is going to be an issue, particularly in small, in some of the poorer communities. That division also has the Local Boundary Commission, and recently we've shifted over what we call the our economic development or community development components, rural development assistance, community development block grants, the community development quota program. The other division is community, community and rural development, and that focus now for that division is mainly welfare reform. It's your JTPA, Job Training Partnership Act, your STEP, that state training and employment program, which comes out of the unemployment insurance fund. It also has daycare and Head Start. The other division is the Division of Energy, which came over from the old Energy Authority, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. It focuses primarily on small communities, hydro projects, bulk fuel, utility line upgrades, and fortunately a lot of emergency services to the 50-plus standalone utilities in rural Alaska, and then it also works with the Power Cost Equalization Program. The other division is, again, the Division of Administrative Services, which is our audit budget and keeps track and keeps us in line. On the sheet, the our pie chart, without how little we do or how little we are the state budget, shows there's $146 million total in our budget. 87% of that, about $126 million, is pass-through. We touch and it goes. The remaining roughly $19.5 million is program and administration. Page 2 shows you just briefly where those pass-through funds come from. Approximately $72 million is general fund or general fund match. $27 million is federal. Interagency is 10, and then other, which is the PCE, power cost equalization, is roughly $17 million. Of those funds, just briefly, the formula funded programs on page 3 for $52 million, that's your revenue sharing municipal assistance. That's all, of course, general funds. Children's programs, which is daycare and Head Start, $17 million, which is general funds, and the rest is federal and general fund match. Jobs training, again, that's JTPA, STEP program, dislocated workers program. Energy assistance, $17 million, again, for power cost equalization. The remaining $15 million National Forest receipts, actually last year I think they received about $6.7 million, although we've asked for authority up to $10 million. Legal services for $100,000. The ARDER, or the Alaska Regional Development Organization, it's a general fund appropriation. Actually, it's not a general fund, it's actually from ADA. It's for a program that was run by Commerce last year, but now is under Municipal and Regional Assistance Division. AmeriCorps, which is President Clinton's sort of VISTA program. We, again, operate for federal funding. The raw fish tax, as we all know, the Department of Revenue raises revenues, and then the state, in turn, splits those revenues with communities where the active processing occurred within the municipal boundaries. In addition to that, the law was changed about 5 years ago where those processing activities that occurred outside of municipalities but inside territorial waters, that it could be shown did in fact impact communities, a percentage of that is split with the communities. And it's roughly $750,000 to $800,000 annually. Then the other funds that we pass through are the coastal management, which is federal. And then we have the Rural Utility Business Assistance, which is a small grant. The next page, page 4, just give you an overview on our program and administration. Our general fund and general fund match is $8.3 million. I guess we could say we don't have much money then. And the rest is federal funding, $7 million, and then interagency funds and CIP funds, totals about $3 million. The key changes, the main changes from FY97 to net FY98 budget request, First of all, again, are some changes we've made in terms of how we provide programs. We took the ARDER program, as it's called, from Commerce, along with our Community Development Block Grant, which is a federal-funded program, the CDQ program, Community Development Quota program, the RDA program, and then what's called the Rural Development Initiative Fund, which is a loan program to small businesses in rural Alaska, and placed it in the Division of Municipal and Regional Assistance. That division has offices in all seven communities. It's in the field, if you will, with the smaller communities almost on a daily basis. We felt like, one, it did not cost any more money. Nobody moved from a chair. But in the long run, we think it comports more with our efforts to deal directly with small communities in rural Alaska in a more effective and efficient way. It also allowed that other division, Community and Rural Development, to focus on those issues that are with job training, daycare, and Head Start, and are part of the overall welfare reform process that HESS is driving, I should say. The other major changes was a deduction in the Division of Energy of $400,000 in general funds, which I think will net result mean we will do the same, but at a slower pace. It means less bodies in our department. The other major change is a deduction in revenue sharing municipal assistance by about 2.3%. That cut is equal to about $1.2 million. The other general fund cuts were about $160,000 in municipal and regional assistance for training and development, $50,000 in a child care grant, and elimination of a deputy director slot, and then additional $180,000 deduction from the Division of Administrative Services. The only increases we had were what we call, again, a RUBA, Rural Utility Business Assistance. We had been receiving a grant from EPA for a number of years. We have a person in St. Mary's and I believe one or two other communities working with the smaller communities. And we are no longer getting that grant, but this program is a high priority of the Rural Sanitation Council, and so we want to supplement that with general funds. The other increase is a additional $300,000 request for Head Start, which would be a pass-through, if you will, to the communities. Other than that, I think we would just point out that our department has been active in what we call community response partnership activities, and that is the closure of the mill in Wrangell and now in Ketchikan. We have worked closely with the community of Valdez, and then we're active in the ADAC closure and continue to be active in the activities with the Delta Fort Greeley area. We continue to work as well with the IRS. The IRS has garnished, I guess, or taken away municipal assistance and revenue sharing to the smaller communities because of they have not withheld taxes from salaries or for other reasons. We have found ourselves to be an arbitrator, I guess you might say, or mediator between the IRS and a number of these smaller communities, and have been able to reduce the assessment or levy that's been imposed upon the IRS. Our guess or assumption is that this is going to continue to be the case as you have high turnover in some of the smaller communities and more of an aggressive enforcement policy by the IRS. We continue, too, to be involved, as I mentioned earlier, with some of the emergencies, particularly when standalone utility generators catch on fire or go out. We are set up to go out on an emergency case basis and assist the communities. Whether it's fire or storm. We work with these communities with training, but I think this is not something that's going to go away in the near future. Other than that, I think we continue to do what we think we do best, and that is to work directly with small communities, a lot of one-on-one technical training with community councils, clerks, managers. We continue to work, and I think we see as a promising sign with the Community Development Quota Program. As many of you know, that program was set up a couple years ago where they take 7.5% of what's called the TAC, the total allowable catch for pollock in the Bering Sea, transfer it to this program and divide it amongst the six different groups in Western Alaska who in turn leverage that value for partnership alliances or business partnerships with seafood companies. The Magnuson-Stevens Act has been expanded, so there are additional species added to the pollock. In the future, will include crab. I think it's stared in like 3.5%, 5.5%, and 7% starting in year calendar year 98. This has proven to be, for example, in the Norton Sound area, now the second largest private employer. At the mouth of the Yukon, our understanding, it is the largest employer, at least directly and maybe secondarily, for all, both public and private sector, is through the CDQ program. It's not without its problems, not without, you know, them. Not every investment that the groups have made has made them millions, but I think it has allowed and produced a lot of opportunity for coastal communities, and it only affects those communities that are on the coast and 50 miles in to be able to participate in the bottom fish industry. So, in short, we continue to do a lot of on-the-ground activity with a number of communities with our modest budget. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll be happy to answer any questions.
I had a quick one. How did you come up with a 2.3% cut in municipal assistance? We always get these questions. How did you come up with your cap? How did you do this? And sometimes it's a convoluted way, but I'm just curious where you got the, it's like $1,200,000.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have an answer for that. I think there's no science involved, I'll say that much.
Were you trying to meet a goal of total amount in your department? Or I mean, it's just...
Mr. Chairman, that number was provided to us by Office of Management Budget. I think that was part of their overall target reduction.
Okay. Representative Martin?
On that point, have your department and maybe some other departments should do this, but especially your department, balance that off with the revenue share taxes that have increased in the last few years and other new programs we have for the coastal communities? It seems to me that you all are making a better share of the budget now if we add other aspects of direct taxes that go to you or your villages and communities rather than just the share of revenue or municipal assistance.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, I'm not sure that has been, there has been that much of a comprehensive discussion in that way. I know there are different programs, whether it's the payment in lieu of taxes or whether it's the sharing of the raw fish tax. I think it's been looked at, but I'm not sure if anybody's tried to figure out how to combine them that much. It just seems to be for every rule there's an exception, so I think they have kind of kept them separate in trying to figure out what is an equitable way to share state revenues.
Yeah, so. I've always been jealous, Mr. Chairman, where the smaller communities that had the natural resources of fishing and timber and so on get a larger proportion, less population, but a larger proportion of those taxes compared to the Fairbanks or Anchorage communities that probably need a larger proportion of share of revenues. Somehow, I'm thinking now we should put it all in one pot.
Sales tax.
Representative Davies. Like that.
I have one comment and one question, if I might. I had the opportunity this summer to visit a number of communities in Western Alaska and get a first-hand impression of how the water and sewer installation programs were going, and I just wanted to say that in general I was pleased with what I saw. Particularly, I'd like to underscore the emphasis on using local people to actually do the construction, to train them, to bring them up to speed, and then from that population to draw the people who eventually will operate the system. I think that bodes well for the future in terms of being able to reduce the M&O costs or keep them within reasonable levels, and also I think there was some, I think there's a lot of work left to do, but there was a fair amount of consideration given to where the revenues would come to continue to operate those, and that's certainly a big problem, but I commend the effort so far. It looks like at least the places where we went were fairly successful, so I appreciate that. I am concerned, though, especially with the $400,000 cut in the energy group. There was a lot of discussion in the legislature last year. We passed legislation in the House, at least, and I've forgotten if it went out of the Senate, but for looking at other energy options in rural Alaska and trying to find, you know, particularly with methane gas and those kinds of things, trying to find ways to reduce the need for the energy subsidies, and I'm concerned that if we don't keep a fairly strong effort on that, that we're not going to be able to find those options in rural Alaska in a timely way. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
Just before you do, I want to make Percy Frisbee is on the line, I believe, by teleconference. I didn't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
So I'll let you. Are you there, Percy?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Okay, thanks. And I'll let Lamar either answer or defer to you if that's what he chooses to do. But
sure. I think through the chair, Representative Davies, I think it was a tough call for us. I mean, I think we had to look at a lot of different ways to meet some cut requirements, and hopefully it doesn't come across or be misconstrued that we don't care about the energy needs and the overall utility challenge in rural Alaska, which I think when you look at it, it's bulk fuel, water and sewer, electric, and landfills, which all are sort of basic core services that do require M&O and have a lot of regulatory oversight and heavy capital investment, both to construct and then long-term M&O. We are looking at alternative energy. We've just recently completed a hydroelectric project study looking around Alaska, and we are wanting to look at a number of those sites a lot closer. We have participated over the years in one hydro projects in King Cove, what's the one up by Non Dalton in Iliamna. I think it's like about a $13 million project's going to be underway. Uzinki and I think it's Larson Bay have got recent hydro projects. We're also working with the Federal Department of Energy. I know we've been working with Deering and Kotzebue with some wind projects. That doesn't provide a solution for all the communities. I think we all accept that it's going to be very incremental, and in many cases, they will always be on fuel. I mean, in spite of efforts, wind and hydro are not applicable in many communities. So I guess what I'm saying is, one, we don't have a monopoly on all the good ideas, nor is there any silver bullet for this on some of these projects. I think some communities, frankly, will continue to have problems, both because of the lack of public money, but also because, frankly, there's not a lot of private money, nor is there a way to attract private investment in some communities. So we still go, for example, with respect to many of these projects, particularly bulk fuel, on a ad need basis, or which ones are being given citations by the Coast Guard. We are working aggressively with the Federal Department of Energy and EPA looking for other funds, and we work closely with Senator Stevens's office. In fact, we did receive, I believe, $2 million this year for additional work with bulk fuel plants. So we're trying to be as creative as possible. I don't want to come across like we're complaining. We all recognize we're in a tight bind financially at the state level. We are trying to, and the Division of Energy does often try to, quote, partner, if you will, with many of the small communities in financing projects. We have what they call the Power Project Fund program, and we have currently, I think, about $20 million in loans for a variety of different kind of power projects. For example, we just loaned Cordova $1 million to look at or continue their efforts to a hydro project in the Cordova area. We've loaned money for $2.3 million to St. Paul for them to construct a new utility plant. These loans can be at market rate, which is about 6% down to zero, depending on the ability of the community to pay. We've loaned money to village corporations for bulk fuel tanks. So we are trying to work with them along with the bond bank, which is now being a little more creative in loaning money to small communities. Even though it was for schools, I think many of us were encouraged by the fact that Hoon and Craig has borrowed money from the bond bank along with Aleutians East and Lake and Peninsula Borough. Unlike other communities that have borrowed, those communities do not now have property tax, nor do we expect them to. But because of the strength of their raw fish tax that they impose, bond bank and people who, you know, buy debt are comfortable enough that they will in fact be able to pay it back. So I think one of the things that we see is getting there when we talk about capital projects is debt financing. And debt financing is not just going to be for your Cordovas and Sewards and Kenai's, but it's going to be for the smaller communities as well. And I think that when you try to be realistic about the options to get there, that is one. It's probably one of the main ones people have to accept as part of the reality in the future. Or it's simply going to take, you can just husband your money so long. I mean, you're going to have to hold on to your money to build something, or you're going to have to go out and get in debt. So I think that's also something we're trying to encourage and work with communities with.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a reduction in deputy director. Is that an unfilled slot?
We don't, through the chair, Representative Davis, that's vacant, and we have no intention of filling it. So.
What about just a quick update on PCE? I see it's $17 million again. We don't have the money in the four dam pool, at least this year, and probably not next, coming in because of the maintenance cost. That 40% that was supposed to flow in is not flowing in. So how soon are we going to run out of money?
As it stands now, with those FY 97-98, with not receiving those funds during those 2 years, probably in the first couple of months of FY 2000, so that'd be in the fall of 99. We've been looking at the issue as well, Mr. Chairman. I think you're right. Clearly, without recapitalization, your options are pretty limited. You can take people, you can raise the floor and lower the ceiling on the program. You can take away commercial customers or school districts, but unless you start to, for example, take off regions, you know, like take off the Gulf or something, or remove communities like Cordova and Unalaska and larger communities, I would say that with Representative Moses not being here. But if you take off, you know, you start to take out large chunks, you have no other option other than to recapitalize the program. So, to continue it, I should say.
Other questions at this point?
Mr. Chairman, I know that we did a recap of the major changes in general funds, because I know that's what we send the team have a tendency to concentrate on. But I just wanted to add that, not included in the packet, but in looking at our budget, you'll see that there's some major changes in our budget in terms of federal programs. We talked to labor about the one-stop shop. Those funds are coming through our department and the Division of Administrative Services, so you'll see a significant increase in federal funds in admin services in a component called one-stop shop. And also, you'll see an increase in federal funds for the temporary assistance program, the welfare reform, interagency receipts from the Department of Health and Social Services. So those, as well as anticipated receipts for the National Reserve Grant for the Ketchikan area, we have not received those funds yet. We have not been awarded those funds, but we do have those budgeted in anticipation of receiving them. So we've got about a $6 million increase in our budget for federal funds, and then about $2.7 million in interagency receipts for those types of programs.
Representative Martin?
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. Let's get to Alaska Health and Finance. Do you anticipate using some more of the excess monies for water and sewage?
In the capital budget?
In the capital, yes.
Through the chair, I'm not aware of.
I thought we did that last year.
May have. We don't. Our department relationship with water and sewer is principally training with people. It's not to do with capital. That's more of
the
funds. DEC,
yeah. DEC did. Okay. On the Fort Dam pool, is that a possibility just to explore right now, since there is some advocacy for the Southeast communities owning their own, and they're willing to pay $84 million for it. Could that, if your thinking goes that far, later be used for the energy program that the chairman was talking about for the long range? I just want to throw that out now, because there seemed to be more emphasis now on the Fort Dam pool being owned wholeheartedly by the Southeast community, or another California group, I guess. But Chairman's right. It is a problem that you know, Mark.
Through the chair, I actually those discussions have been principally between ADA, I think, and the Four Dam Pool recipients. We have not been a participant in that. Uh-huh. We have tried to, so you're aware, our department with respect to energy projects has tried to focus, you know, instead of shotgunning, to focus primarily on the smaller communities. Again, those basic services with bulk fuel and electricity upgrading of utility systems in general. And I think one of the faults that many of us have at times, we get ourselves spread too thin, and I think we've tried to just pick out, if you will, two or three things and focus on them, and they have been mainly the smaller projects in rural Alaska.
Representative Grusner?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Four Dam Pool people have paid in about $100 million so far into the fund, and because of what happened the fiscal year we're in, there is no money for power cost equalization, or it's the threatened, because they have what they call the self-help provision within there, which allows those municipalities to divert the payment and put it into the maintenance of the project, and it appears it's going to happen again. But I just wanted to let people understand here that the communities in the Four Dam Pool have put in about $100 million in at this point.
What's taking it back now?
Well, it's either that they do it because the state isn't doing it, and so that's one way to earmark the money.
Yeah, the contracts actually allow, I just checked today, there's 35 years left, I think, on the power agreements, and they're paying about $11 to $12 million a year, and at least for the next 2 years, it appears that they will probably use that money to do some line work and maybe some stuff on Kodiak. It's all approved by
legislation.
No, actually, well, I mean, aid is the one that actually determines whether or not they get to do the maintenance work, so there is some check. It isn't just the communities. Constantly, and I talked to some ADA folks who think that, you know, a couple of years from now, they will get back to the payments coming back into the state again. So, and at that point, I think it's 40% of those payments go to the PCE program. There's 20%. There's a 40-40-20, and I can't remember. But so, you know, there are negotiations going on right now for those communities to get a handle on them or buy them, divest from the state. There's another offer being bantered around, so I'm sure we'll have some discussion about those as well. So in the future, but any other questions? If not, thank you very much. And again, we'll next week sometime we'll have subcommittee chairs and members appointed so that you have an idea of who to work with. And with that, we will adjourn for today. We have tomorrow the university.